Whether it's a midweek game on the continent or a big weekend clash, cash in with your soccer knowledge on Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match of up to $100. This episode is sponsored by Audible, the home of storytelling. As an Audible member, you can choose one title a month to keep from their entire catalogue. Audible is the destination for thrilling audio entertainment with highly anticipated new releases. I'm currently listening to The Secret Hours by Mick Herron. That's the standalone prequel to the majestic Slow Horses television series. I can't stop listening. New members can try Audible free for 30 days. Visit audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. That's audible.com/courage or text courage to 500 500. You're listening to the Men in Blazers Media Network. Suboptimal Radio.
I touched it in there. I was in there and I came off my shin somewhere in there, so I'm taking credit for it.
From the Men in Blazers studios in the crap part of Bedford, New York, and the crap part of West Hollywood, California, it's the Men in Blazers podcast, Rog.
We back! Like Premier League insider David Ornstein, Davo.
Ah, he's one of the greats.
Our 30th Premier League season begins. Big picture, how did you experience this first weekend of just almost orgiastic wonder?
Well, I mean, West Coast GFOPs, respect, because it's a lot of very early mornings. It's a lot of fumbling around at 4:15 trying to check where is this game streaming or is it on YouTube? Like moving between Fubo, YouTube TV and the Peacock, Rog. There's just a lot of moving around. But wow, what an opening weekend. I loved it.
I've always said 4:30 a.m. Robbie Musto is one of my top five Robbie Mustos. But my biggest takeaway was that Lee Dixon was on best behaviour all weekend. I mean, that gent did not threaten to punch Peter Drury once in a friendly but still menacing way in the same way as he did on a weekly basis with Arlo White.
You know, I was trying to analyse all of the microaggressions that existed between Lee Dixon and Graham Lasso and Peter Drury. Peter Drury has a major size advantage over Lee Dixon, but that's never bothered the former gunner in the past.
He's got reach advantage too. When you do the tail of the Peter Drury tape.
Immediately, what an amazing three-man booth they've turned out to be. Peter Drury, love that man's voice. Just enjoy it.
He's a poet. He is a poet first, football commentator second, but a glorious and remarkable man. And the other big takeaway, probably even more important, is that the really rather unfortunate shirts that the Premier League has handed out to all of its referees this season, whoever decided to go round neck with the thick white collar, it's an unforgiving look, isn't it?
You know, you posted the other day the vintage Division One referees. I think it was referees from the 70s. Was it 60s or 70s? Yes. And that look, when they really did look like school
big
headmasters.
Collar. Yeah. Big collars.
I miss that look. They need to have like, you know, when sometimes like in American sports, they have a retro day. They do it especially in baseball. I think they do it in the NBA sometimes. I'd love to see a retro day just for the refs when they have to go and wear the old uniforms.
Are you talking about just the uniforms or do you think they should exhume the old referees and say it's like Pat Partridge? If you didn't watch elite English first division football in the pre-Premier League days, the referees truly were part-time. Like they ref for the fun. They just loved the abuse. Most of them were teachers or policemen or whatever. And
sadists.
Yeah, all of them. Yeah, I mean, deaf sadist number one. If LinkedIn was invented back then, it would say my profession, sadism. I love it in the face. But we posted a clip that someone brilliant in Britain created where they just ran the first second of every single football game that was broadcast in the 1970s and 80s, where they'd always have an opening shot where the referee would blow his whistle and the commentator would be forced to say, our referee is Alan Smithfield, a teacher. Our referee is Stephen Clark. He's a military man. And they're just a link of incredible professions. But this new shirt that they've doled out to these guys who are now mostly professional, that round neck, that thick white collar, it makes every single Premier League referee, from Anthony Taylor all the way to new boy, hello new friend, Tom Bramall, 32, promoted from the Championship, they all look, Davo, round neck, white neck, black shirt. They all look like the hot priest from Fleabag. It'll pass.
Oh, then bite your arm off to be the hot priest from Fleabag. Yeah. It's an odd thing. I think we need to spend more time analysing. I think this season, maybe this is my commitment to you, Rog, is I'm going to get more into that couple of handfuls of referees who ref Premier League games, and we're going to learn more about them.
On a week-by-week basis, you're going to dole out information.
Yeah. Do you know, isn't it Private Eye who used to do Bishop of the Month? Like, we really need to get into a referee of the week. We need to really just get into like a deep analysis, find out everything we can about them. We need to interview more refs.
I'm still fascinated by your notion of Lee Dixon microaggressions, which sounds like one of the great prog rock albums of the 1970s.
Oh, there are a lot of them. If you really if you really listen in, if you're really attuned for a microaggression, he's got a lot of them.
There's a lot of microaggressions and a lot of football for us to dive into. Our cup overfloweth, Davo, so let's get cracking.
Yeah, first of all, big news from Men in Blazers World Headquarters. We've got a brand new pod series dropping tomorrow night, what? Right here on this very pod feed. Yeah, I believe you're involved.
American States
United, presented by ESPN Plus. Rog, this is you sitting down with some of the baby Eagles' biggest stars playing abroad, and it kicks off with none other than a man vying for the gloves at this year's World Cup, Arsenal's Matt Turner, in what is a phenomenal interview.
Oh, American States United. I am overjoyed to make this season. States. And I will say, about this podcast, Matt, emotional intelligence, the way he's able to take us inside his mindset in this moment, as he takes a massive gamble ahead of the World Cup, transitioning into English football at Arsenal Football Club in this moment, it's quite incredible. And he was so bloody generous with his candor during this conversation, describing how he weighed or handicap the move abroad, what Mikel Arteta's told him to expect in this new setting. And he also reveals a bit of previously unknown news about an incident which would ruin, it would just ruin lesser human beings that almost killed his national team career before it began.
Okay, can't wait to listen for that. It hits our pod feed early tomorrow morning. And then Wednesday, Rog, you're dropping a pod with the CEO of Nottingham Forest Football, Reading, Connecticut, and UVA's own Dane Murphy.
Wahoo wah!
And that evening, we do it live on AMP, a live radio app that allows you to listen to us pod live. It also allows you to join us on the broadcast to ask your questions. This week's episode is an AMP exclusive. We will not release it as a podcast. So if you want to join, you have to be on AMP. Simply download the app and follow at Men in Blazers to get involved. Again, that's 5 p.m. Eastern Time Wednesday. Do not miss it. Rog, let's kick this pod off, this historic pod, off with a twist.
I want to raise my first third bud of the day to big, big news, of which I am genuinely so bloody proud of. We've written a new book.
No.
Yes.
Really?
We did it together.
Really? We did?
With oh, yes. Great all those Miranda hours. Miranda Davis of the women's game, Gods of Soccer is the name of the book. The Pantheon of the 100 Greatest Soccer Players of All Time, asterisk, according to us. And it comes out ahead of the World Cup in October. You know that every fan has their own list of the 100 soccer players they consider to be the greatest ever to play the game. That list that's based on triumphs and moments of wonder, superhuman tenacity, telenovela-esque backstories. And to the list maker, that list feels 100% objective, unequivocal, could be written in stone, in absolute truth. And this book is our list. We put it together with joy, with a sense of argument, with a sense of wonder. It includes household names like David Beckham and Alex Morgan, but also cult icons such as Garrincha. God, I wish I'd seen that man. The Brazilian star of the 1960s, an incredible dribbler. Just look at him on YouTube. He was born with one leg 6 inches shorter than the other. And Brianna Scurry, a trailblazer who paved a path for young African-American soccer playing women to follow. And I've always loved the beautiful way our publisher Chronicle Books create mostly massive art books, stunning work. So to partner with them and an immensely talented artist, Nate Kitch, that we found in England, just a gentleman who creates kinetic football imagery to create a full colour tome, has been a creative act of wonder. We're really inspired by the brilliant format of Goodnight Stories for Rebel Girls. I'm sure many of you who have young kids know that book. Really hope this is a book that fans young and old can savour together. And my last word on this is, you know, dear GFOPs, how bloody much pre-orders contribute to the success of a book. You know, right, Davo?
Yeah, absolutely. It's essential.
They are everything. And we are elated to work with two remarkable indie bookstores, Elliott Bay in Seattle, that magical kingdom, and The Strand in New York City, both of whom have signed editions available for pre-order right now. They also come with limited edition posters of Nate Kitch's artwork. As I say, GFOPs, this pre-order is everything to us. We're going to do a digital launch party, which anyone who pre-orders and shows proof of purchase can come join us in. Come be with us. Your support on this project is so bloody meaningful. We will never take it for granted. And support your indie bookstores, America. The pre-order link's all over our website, all over our social. Be in touch if you can't find it. And your support, God, thank you, thank you, thank you.
To the Premier League football, it is back in our loving arms, and not a minute too soon. We begin with one of the surprise results of the weekend, the early Saturday morning fixture, newly promoted Fulham 2, Liverpool 2. The yo-yoing cottagers hold Jurgen Klopp's mentality monsters to a draw. It was Fulham who started the scoring in the 32nd minute with mild-mannered Serb Aleksandar Mitrovic absolutely supermanning TAA at the back post to head home. Liverpool would draw level in the 64th minute when substitute Darwin Nunez produced a sublime flick to send the ball into the roof of the Fulham net, but Marco Silva's mob would not wilt. Mitrovic, who's been on the Calm app since we last saw him, Rog, caught the normally infallible VVD with his feet as flat as a Stupwaffel. VVD fouled him in the area, and Mitro converted the penalty to complete his brace. Mo Salah stabbed home an 80th minute equaliser, and Hendo thundered the bar at the death. But in the end, Liverpool are held to a single point in West London.
And so the post-Sadio Mane moment of inflection and change begins for Liverpool with that Uruguayan liver king Darwin Nunez on the bench. Bobby Firmino got the cliched nod, one of an incredible six players that the Reds fielded who were age 30 plus, the most I think they fielded since February 1994. And what was to come probably frustrated the fans all the more because it was their experienced kings, Firmino, Hendo, Big Virg, who struggled to start the season emphatically. Fulham, welcome back, new friends. The last two times in the Premier League under Shahid Khan, they had Norwich straight back down. And in full America style, they unleashed Anthony Robinson and the great Tim Ream. And they were both game from the off, to be fair, pressing a sloppy Liverpool feistily. And it paid dividends in the 33rd minute. A counter started. Don't like to boast, but with Tim Ream heading the ball forward. Liverpool fans do believe Hendo was fouled in the build-up, David. But what followed was an exclamation point of wonder.
Yeah, it's a goal you don't see a lot of. You imagine Premier League goals being scored a lot like this. These sort of beautiful back post crosses and these thundering on the run headers. Just frank, it doesn't matter where he put that ball. Even if it was right at the keeper, it would have gone in. It would have knocked the keeper into the back of the net. Just a fantastic thundering header by the Serb, who seems to be excited to be back in the Premier League this time.
I can't tell whether he's excited to be back in the Premier League or he just welcomes any opportunity to grind his down belows over defenders of any kind. But what a ball floated him. And it was Mitrovic soaring over Trent Alexander-Arnold. He can't defend to head home. Really, it's like watching a Serbian big country Bryant Reeves unfurling a backboard shattering dunk. Just an exclamation moment for a striker who, yes, bullied 43 goals in the championship last season, but has been smeared constantly with the accusation that he can't handle the class of the Premier League. Schadenfreude 1, Liverpool 0 at halftime. Liverpool only behind at halftime, I think once last season. That was against Manchester City. And I realised, Davo, there was a certain sadness. I was struck by a sense that first half might prove to be the happiest Everton fans are all season.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, sorry, I shouldn't agree so wholeheartedly with that, Rog. You'll have some other moments.
You know, GFOP at Perilexcurus had to spoil it for me. He said, until the realisation sets in that this actually hurts you in a relegation battle to come, it's true. But God, what did you make of it?
This is Mitrovic at his Serbian best. And I got to tell you, strikers, as we will discuss, are such a genuine number nines, are at such a premium in the Premier League. If he can really stay fit, knock him in the back of the net, Fulham will be dangerous.
I don't like to overreact, but Anthony Robinson had showed enough in that first 45 minutes shutting down Liverpool to convince me that the US are going to clobber England at the World Cup. But my only worry was, could Fulham keep up that press for the full 90 minutes in that heat? But first, it would get worse for Liverpool. Thiago limped off of what looked like a hamstring injury. On came Darwin Nunez. And his energy, along with Harvey Elliott, revived Liverpool a little. Elliott, 18, who, remember, came through the Fulham Academy, was booed royally by the Fulham fans of every touch. The sun was shining. They were loving watching their team torment a sloppy, woeful Liverpool. Had not had a shot on target in the first hour, but entered Darwin Nunez.
It was a pretty nice first goal in the Premier League, Rog. maybe it's one of his sort of average goals, one of the goals he's used to scoring in practice, but he seems to sort of take it between his legs. He seems to add a third leg somewhere that he manages to backheel it and roofs it into the net somehow.
God, it was a ball squared by Mo Salah. The Fulham defender Tosin to prod it in off him when you look really carefully. But perhaps the most transcendent moment of the whole thing after that touch from a tender lover that Darwin Nunez unleashed was that the abs master resisted the human urge to rip off his shirt, Davo, which would break lesser humans, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, but this wasn't the Community Shield, Rog. It was only the opening weekend of the Premier League. You don't rip your shirt off in every game. You wait for
you
the big ones.
You save it for the big one. You wait for the big ones. And it felt like in that moment, we're about to watch a movie that I've watched so bloody many times before, which is Sadder Than Beaches with Barbara Hershey. Only this one felt like it had a sudden surprise ending. Mitrovic drove at Big Verge. Left a leg out. What are you doing, Big Verge? Inviting that large Serbian wardrobe to take a tumble in slightly Salah-esque fashion, wouldn't you say? Liverpool fans fuming with the award. I think partially because we're just not used to witnessing Verge look so human and vulnerable, Dave. What did you make of it?
Yeah, I think it was the weekend of clear penalties not seen by the vast majority of the fans who were hurt by the awards. I don't think this was a dive. If you're the size of Mitrovic and you're moving at that speed, force equals mass times acceleration, Rog, just look at the wobble on the slow-mo on Verge's entire leg as his knee makes contact with the Serbians. I don't know, was it his thigh? Was it his knee? Is his thigh and his knee sort of, you know... Are they just like one part of his leg? Is it the thigh? Is it the nigh? I don't know what it is. Yeah, it's his lower body. And, you know, he goes down. I can't imagine not seeing that given at any other point and a clear penalty. And it just shows why a genuine number nine in the Premier League is so dangerous, a player like Mitrovic, because even a defender with the class of Virgil van Dijk couldn't really handle him.
27th goal at Craven Cottage in 23 home games for that Danube round mound of rebound. I thought we should stop the presses. Let's get him into Gods of Soccer, Davo, in that second edition. But Fulham fans, again, dancing in the sun. They look like Anthony Robinson, elated when he's unleashing a card trick. But joy and romance have no place in football. A routine ball dropped over the top of Fulham's defence, nodded on agonisingly by that noble old knight, Tim Ream, that Sir Barristan Selmy of American soccer. And it dropped to Nunez, who kind of half-controlled it and gave Mo the chance to slap home. Oh, Davo, it was heartbreaking. Could have been worse. Hendo rasped the crossbar at the death. But bloody hell, brave, organised, confident football from Fulham, which this was the first time they'd avoided defeat in the opening game of a top flight season after winning promotion. Should they be disappointed they couldn't hold on to a lead twice, but or should they just be bite your arm off? This is a point against bloody Liverpool.
Yeah, well, I'm sure, you know, that's what they're being told by Marco Silva in the dressing room this week at their training ground. That was a great thing to build off, a great way to start the season. And I'm sure seeing Liverpool come in first day, they feared what was going to happen to them and for their confidence going into week two.
Big takeaway for me from a Fulham perspective is, my God, this is going to be some savage fight in the relegation battle this season. Three of really 11 or 12 teams are going to be fighting hand to hand from the very first day. And Marco Silva summoning this caliber of performance, a collective performance out of a middling squad, honestly, can make him the kind of manager Everton would look at. Lols. For Liverpool, kinks still being worked out, I think, for their fan base, fuming about both Fulham goals. But really, that backline set of kings, Trent and Virgil, who are at fault for both, left Klopp. Yes, talking about how the pitch was dry, which is also lols. But he was more honest, Davo. The performance was a defeat. The result wasn't a defeat, but the performance was. How do you understand it?
Look, I think the Premier League is a very, very tough league. And I think when you've got newly promoted teams, and this is now a team, this is bizarre. They are experienced in being newly promoted. This is one of the natures of this, like, you know, of the parachute payments, and that they protect the teams as they go down, which is a very good thing. But Fulham have experience now of how to deal with coming back up. I think this Liverpool team is still very good. I still think they're going to challenge City all the way. But yeah, this is not an ideal start to the season.
Well, I think every team that lost their fan base was able to remind themselves that Manchester City lost their first game last season, still went on to win it. I know I am for Everton Football Club. But Klopp's hinting that it was his players' attitude which was to blame. The honest truth is, I watched that performance, that level of fatigue, or almost looking hungover, and thought about that pre-season. And these pre-seasons are both for footballing reasons, but the footballing reasons always battle with the commercial reasons. And when you travel in a compressed time period to, where do they go, Thailand, Singapore, Germany and Austria, your players are inherently going to be less ready and more shattered. And I think a lot of this was self-inflicted.
Yeah, and maybe a little bit of a hangover from getting perhaps a little overexcited over the Community Shield win.
Nonsense. You can never get too excited about the Com Shield.
You are so right, though, that we can read too much into the opening weekend. Last year's opening weekend, I looked it up, Rog. Watford beat Aston Villa 3-2 opening weekend. Their fans delirious in the North London sunshine. Yeah, you mentioned Tottenham beating Man City on day one. And, of course, your beloved Everton, Rog, opened the season with a 3-1 win against Southampton last year.
Yeah, which set a tone that the rest of the season followed surely and sweetly. Never in doubt. Talking about Manchester City. Let's dive in.
They come down to East London, to the London Stadium. West Ham 0, Manchester City 2. The debut all of global football is talking about, Rog. That Beowulf in football boots, Erling Haaland, scores twice in his very first Premier League game. The first, a penalty kick that the 22-year-old drew himself when he was brought down by substitute Irons keeper Alphonse Areola. And in the 65th minute, he collected a Michelin star KDB ball before calmly steering it past Areola. Rog, the team that can kill you with paper cuts now also has a sledgehammer.
God, Pep's seventh season as Manchester City manager, his seventh Captain Ahab-esque pursuit of Champions League glory, began amidst the bubbles of West Ham, for which he filled his team sensibly in high-vis yellow shirts. Haaland and Grealish started for City. David, is that Halish or is it Greeland?
I think it's whatever Haaland decides. I mean, Grealish is so besotted with the man. I think he'd do anything. He'd change his name in a second. He'd change his first name to Erling. It'd be Erling Grealish. I love that.
Greeland sounds like some incredible Scando country where the lead exports are whaling and cod liver oil extraction. I'm going to go with that. And all the talk was about Haaland and just how long, how many weeks, how many months would it be a full season for him to bed in. Miguel Delaney, a fantastic article, I think it was Thursday or Friday, dropped that Guardiola wants Haaland to press much more, wants to educate the player. There was a delicious detail, which I thought you'd love, Davo. While Guardiola calls most players by their first name, your Jacks, your Philip. I wonder if he calls Foden Philip or probably just son. Ginger Kev, he calls them all by their first names. He always, in training, calls Haaland by his surname. Does that not remind you of school?
It does. It's like, Haaland! Yeah. I know. It's the big boy. He's got to control him. Or he's going to, like, he'll literally destroy everything in the dressing room and everybody, all of his teammates, all of the back room, everything.
Haaland, put John Stones down! The reality is that there are people, I realise this, who you naturally call by their first name. There's people you naturally call by their second name. There's people whose names, they just constantly are called by boot. Like, if you're called Alex Daniels, you are just constantly, everyone says, hello, Alex Daniels. It's very weird how that works. I never quite understand when you call people by two names, but that's how it works. And Haaland is most definitely a Haaland. And West Ham opened in proper Moyes fashion, despising space. City attempted to unleash all their weapons, your Fodens, your KDBs, your Grealishes, your Gundogans, to contort and confuse. City wanted the ball and space. West Ham preferred neither. And it was also so bloody hot, which did not help the spectacle. 90 degrees in London, David. Don't English people melt at 86 and above?
Yeah, maybe lower. Maybe above 60. I mean, it was remarkably warm there.
And it was just like watching Haaland lollop around like Chekhov's gun. And we didn't even have to wait for the third act for that gun to go off. 35th minute, David.
Yeah, Gundogan with a through ball. I mean, they hadn't managed to make a through ball to Haaland, which is kind of an achievement in itself. He's so fast. He's so big. His stride is almost like the entire penalty area in two strides. He gets onto the end of the ball. He didn't look like he was going to make it. He makes it by a mile. And the poor sub-goalkeeper, Rog, takes him down. I mean, you could almost feel the earth shaking when Haaland hit the ground. And penalty, stone cold.
God, it was exactly that. A slipped in reverse pass, charged, was less charged, pounced upon with stealth blistering pace. And you're right, the substitute goalkeeper, Areola, was just full on deer in headlights, brought him down, and Haaland slapped the resulting penalty home. His first shot on target for City, his first goal. I think he scored a debut goal on almost every team he's played on. And he then dropped into his lotus position of Zen. Ah, and I realised in that moment, Davo, Haaland gonna eat us all, isn't he?
Yeah, it was an amazing, it was a beautifully taken penalty as well. And I mean, the one thing I'd say, it was a penalty won in the way that I don't think any other player in the Premier League could have won that penalty. It was a penalty taken in the way that I'm not sure that there's another strike in the Premier League who would take one and hit it that hard right into the side of the netting with his left foot.
I realised watching him just how ruthless he is, just how much he just gets on with it after scoring, as we will discuss at the final whistle. He's got the charisma of an assassin in those Bourne franchises, that just like that evil expert in wet work who we see him murder like tons of people and then is activated from afar to come and clip Bourne. And this gentleman just seems invincible, but you kind of know somehow Bourne's going to strangle him with a lamp cord after a furious hand-to-hand fight in a brothel in a Rio favela. GFOP at Joe Buzz 1 tweeted, Haaland's assassin codename, Codfish.
That's so funny because he does look like one of the Central European terrorists in Die Hard, Rog.
Yes.
If you remember that film, he really looks like, except he runs better.
Pretty well, 99% of any movie that was made in the 90s, Haaland is ripped from really essentially the heel. Second half, more of the same. West Ham, 23% possession. They did have flickering chances in transition. Declan Rice blazed the ball high and wide with the best one. West Ham were empowered by that feeling, emboldened even. The crowd started to lean into the game. The team pushed up. There was roars around the London Stadium. And it all turned out to be a big fatal mistake, right, David?
And the second goal, Rog, this was truly, truly impressive.
De Bruyne, that stunning ball slipped into space where De Bruyne envisioned it before it happened. The huge hulking mass of Erling Haaland charged forward. Really, you watch him in this moment. Would you say that the body of Shaquille O'Neal matched with the speed of Jamar Chase?
Yeah, it is the speed, which is, I mean, you look at Haaland and you just look at the physical size of him, but it's really the speed that makes him so, so absolutely devastating.
I don't know many strikers that would try and finish that with their first touch. Most strikers would take a touch to control the ball and then try and lash it home. He just got his body shape perfectly, thrashed it. As Peter Drury screamed, "Haaland, he always scores, he always will," which is a curious choice of words. But I realise in that moment, it almost reflects a truth of time collapsing. And it already feels, Davo, that we have watched Erling Haaland score that goal dozens of times before in the Premier League.
Well, Peter Drury may have travelled back from the future just to commentate on this game. It's entirely possible.
What else can be a logical, I mean, how else would you explain it? But it makes, by the way, this makes rational sense. I do believe, I felt in that moment, just muscle memory of goals that he has not yet scored, but so many he will thrash. I mean, even Alan Shearer, the great Alan Shearer, the greatest goal scorer in Premier League history, was moved to tweet in that moment, at Erling Haaland, 258 more to go. I mean,
oh my God, Shearer's back from the future also. Everybody's coming back from the future.
But it does feel like all the food chain, as we know it, we're all just like, oh my God, there's a new apex predator. We've all been pushed down. He will eat us all. We're all just fighting for places below this human being at this moment, right?
Yeah, it's the Webb telescope. That's what it's ultimately going to show us, Roger, is beyond all of those galaxies. We're going to point out at some little grain of sand somewhere in the universe, and what we're going to see is like Haaland out there. That would explain everything.
And all those Twitter bants merchants who spent the week tweeting, but what about the Bundesliga tax? All the crap Haaland has taken this week, all the conjecture, the pressure, the put downs. Psychologically, to stroll into the Premier League at age 22, when reportedly his body is still growing, and deliver victory is so bloody humanly impressive. And I know the latest knock on him, for those who want to put him down, is that both his goals came from running in behind. He won't be able to do that against teams that play a low block. I mean, can we just savour this bloke, what he did this weekend, this Norwegian Paul Bunyan, instead of having to write about how crappy he is one week and decide how he's just redefined football the next. Michael, by the way, how big is he, David? I pretty well swear one of his legs is the same size as Tarek Lamptey.
Yeah, that's arguable. I mean, how can teams stay in the low block and expect to come back when they're 1-0 down, Rog? And teams are going to be 1-0 down to City. They've got so many other ways to hurt you quite apart from Erling Haaland. They just look terrifying. And let's remember, West Ham are a really good team. They are playing at London Stadium, where they were really good last season. Not right at the end of the season, but they're really, really good. This was all very impressive.
City do have so many ways to hurt you. They have guys who Pep's calls with their first names who can score too. But in this one, the XG was Haaland 1.59. Everybody else 0.56. At Francis Connor tweeted, "Haaland is KD joining the 73-win Warriors." The thing that really stuck out for me most terrifyingly was Haaland's first post-match interview, just his sentiment. He let into the microphone and said, "Look, it's almost 30 minutes since I last scored, so I have to keep going." It was just like his attitude was like, "Yep, on to the next." Memory card erased. GFOP at Cold Johnny Rico, I give him the last word. He tweeted, "And to do it for a team with such recent struggles too, that's really impressive. We'll see if City will improve their position with his help."
Yeah, so true.
There's so much brilliant football as we come down to the stretch of the Premier League season. But if you're a Premier League neutral who wants a little bit of that title race excitement, check out Prize Picks, America's number one fantasy sports app, where you can get in on the action and win up to 100 times your cash. Prize Picks is the best way to get action on sports in more than 30 states across our nation, including California, Texas, and Georgia. You just select two or more players, pick more or less on their projected stats, and place your entry. It's that easy. You can also mix and match players from several leagues across the globe, as well as other sports like basketball and hockey. That's right, Prize Picks. Essentially a utopia where polysport action can live and breathe. I'm talking Washington Caps, Everton, and Chicago Bulls action all at once in the face. Download the app today. Use code MIB for a first deposit match up to $100. That's promo code MIB. Prize Picks. Pick more, pick less. It's that easy. It's Rog here to tell you about a product that I simply adore. It's been a long time staple in the Bennett refrigerator, Stoke cold brew coffee. Always bold, always smooth. Yes, that is the very same Stoke as in the mighty Wrexham fortress known as the Stoke Kairas or the Stoke Racecourse, Wrexham AFC's home. They support it. They support football, which is just one great reason to love this coffee. It is my go-to enjoy during the football calendar, essentially the opposite of Everton. And you can check out their full lineup of 48 ounce cold brew products, some for everybody, from light to dark roast to seasonal favorites in a refrigerated multi-serve format. I tell you this, as someone whose blood type is now officially Stoke Espresso Blend, have the coffee house experience in the comfort of your own home and do it now. Stoke Cold Brew Coffee, and be sure to follow Wrexham AFC. Big love to all at Stoke. Courage.
Manchester United 1, Brighton and Hove Albion 2, the Erik ten Hag honeymoon era officially cancelled after the Dutch boss loses his first game in charge to the Seagulls. A pair of Pascal Gross goals just 9 first half minutes apart put the visitors up, and not even an Alexis McAllister own goal or the introduction of an up-and-comer you might have heard of, a young Portuguese Cristiano Ronaldo, could get United back into the game. And speaking of Ronaldo, that is where pretty much all of the focus was throughout this one, mostly because of the constant cutaways to him cutting a Portuguese sourpuss on the bench.
Portuguese sourpuss. Sounds like the greatest debut album of lost folk music. But another year, another season of terrible turbulence begins at once invincible Old Trafford, a game that began with the truly exhausted Man United fans protesting the ownership of the Glazers, forced the closure of the club megastore ahead of the game. That is modern football. Let's close the club megastore, lads. That'll show them. But United have bigger problems. Just that self-inflicted Ronaldo nightmare of which we've talked to the point of nausea in the pre-season. The degrading pursuit of De Jong from Barcelona. He doesn't want to come, lads. But, Dave, what do you think of the first impressions as Ten Hag attempted to show swagger during that Martin Scorsese-esque tracking shot down the Old Trafford tunnel to raptures, sense of optimism, a sense of fleeting wonder, that welcome from the Old Trafford faithful? What do you make of him?
Yeah, I mean, it's tough. Like, Dutch people have this way of looking solid and in control when you get to know any Dutch person, like behind it all, when they really start talking, you get to know them better. They are absolutely effing crazy.
It's just soggy waffles beating within exactly. Instead of a heart.
So he looks like this really calm exterior, but I know just in there, we're going to gradually reveal the sort of casual insanity of this man. Liked his opening day outfit. I thought that was nice. Something we haven't really seen that. Haven't totally seen that look in the Premier League before.
I'm pretty sure it's Paul Smith. I think it was a well-cut jacket, right?
Yeah.
Over a white undershirt with racing striped neck. How would you describe it? It says, I've got style, but this is not about me, yeah? Isn't that kind of how you describe the look?
It was a very designer t-shirt and a very well-cut jacket. And that's that was impressive. He was well-groomed. He came out, he was turned out really nicely.
I also admired, to be candid, how he dealt with that awkward first Fred the Red mascot encounter. That honestly, that alone, the awkward from United, if you don't watch the games often, from the tunnel, which is in the corner of Old Trafford, to the dugout, for reasons that are completely unbeknownst to me, because it's orcs for everybody. They position their mascot, the giant bulbous Fred the Red, halfway between. So the manager always has to encounter him. And each one of them does it. Like Ole always just like hugged and just like almost, you just saw the true Ole. He just almost made sweet love to Fred the Red, like as if he was his 25 goal a season striker that he's been looking for. LVG never quite fathomed how to play it. And there was always just like the most orcs interaction. I thought Ten Hag for a first Fred the Red encounter, Dave, I thought he showed firm control and authority.
And let's face it, at a commercially obsessed club like Manchester United, the way you handle your Fred the Red encounters is more important than your performance on the field or how you do as a manager. He handled that very well. But it's, you know, my God, he does feel a little out of place at that club. He just looked like a solitary, very, very lonely man for most of the game.
Oh, increasingly so, as we will discuss. It should be said his team began brightly on a summer's day in which the fans tried to lift the team by chanting Harry Maguire's name. The team responded. They created chances early. McTominay's direct running set up Bruno to smash over with a goal at his mercy. Yet Brighton, Graham Potter's Brighton, they are such an intelligent being. They live to counter, and United's backline and midfield left so much space between the two, Dalot in particular, and tiny debutant Martinez, who had what's known as a Raphael Varane of a debut, gifted them all space in behind. Q Ten Hag, taken to the sideline, dramatically writing notes. David, here was an amazing moment. He uses one of those old school full colour retractable biros. Great to see it back. After he must be going for some kind of sponsorship deal with Bic. At Rob Jeffries tweeted, Erik Ten Hag. But then it just imploded. McTominay turned over possession in the midfield. The ball moved quickly to Trossard. To Manchester United Academy product Welbs. He rolled the ball to Gross. No one loves scoring against United more. Q, Ronaldo trying to suppress a laugh on the bench. And Ten Hag looking like a Munch painting as the first calls of you getting sacked in the morning from the delirious Brighton fans rang out around Old Trafford. But Davo, it would get worse for United. That Fred McTominay midfield was just porous and cumbersome. And Brighton, just a stunning team move from their own corner flag to goal.
Yeah, Brighton more Manchester United of yore than Manchester United were themselves. It was almost like Brighton United, Manchester and Hove Albion. It just was unbelievable. And that move that ends up with another gross goal. It was beautiful, flowing, fast, attacking football. And no one on Manchester United seemed to be getting anywhere near the ball.
It was exactly that there. It was the attack football that the Old Trafford crowd had been baying for. Unfortunately, it was against them. The March shot, parried by De Gea across his own area. Fred didn't sense the danger. Gross strolled into space and roofed the ball. Six goals he scored against United now. I think twice as many as he scored against any other team. But God, Davo, what agony must Ten Hag have felt in that moment when you realise that you're just a Dutch Bob Bradley?
Yeah, it was a better dressed, one has to say. But yeah, it was a stunning, you know, 2-0 down at home and playing at that point, being overrun by a team with a manager who you sort of feel like the Glazers and a bunch of people in the stands are thinking, why didn't we bring in Graham Potter? I mean, what a miserable, miserable, lonely place that must have been to be at the side of that spectacle.
God, his big bull cranium filled only with fight or flight. And I kept hearing David Byrne's voice singing, and you may ask yourself, my God, what have I done? I mean, this was same as it ever was. And what was worst about this opening gambit was we've been told that Ten Hag was a brilliant tactical mind. But that pressing was as bad as it was under Ole and Ragnar. Rashford remains a shell of himself, a player on the Dele Alli downward trajectory. The defending remained ramshackle. It was all so Emperor has no clothes. Even those Paul Smiths couldn't hide Ten Hag's exposed nudity, David.
You know, some of the excitement about Rashford and Sancho during preseason has suddenly dissipated. And, you know, sort of, you know, they didn't really look so strong in that game. You know, we haven't even mentioned Christian Eriksen, who I thought looked, you know, decent at times, but it just overshadowed by what does feel like dead weight, dead wood all around him in that squad.
It is a collective problem. It's a problem we've seen of so many of post-Sir Alec predecessors for Ten Hag, which is no leadership amidst the chaos. When dark moments happen on the field, all the players just prefer to hide, put their heads down, desperately hope not to be noticed and become the main scapegoat because they know the manager will be the lightning rod for criticism. And Ten Hag, who before kickoff had arrived to a delirious crescendo of applause, exited to first half boos. It was an astonishing just turnaround of fate and reality and human darkness. He had to get Ronaldo up and running, booed him. He was booed by some United fans. A dude, Ten Hag probably loathes in this moment to have to rely on Ronaldo. But my God, we were already in a horse, my kingdom for a horse territory. On came Ron, replacing Fred. But only after posing at the front of the dugout shirtless. Here I come to save the day. But first, my abs. Does Messi have abs like these? I don't think so. And then when he trotted on David, don't you think he was probably the happiest person in Old Trafford to have his team 2-0 down without him? They need me.
Yeah, without a doubt. I mean, I think we said on Do It Live last week that, yeah, with trying to figure out what's going to happen in the Ronaldo situation, there's almost certainly going to be a moment at the weekend when they're going to be trailing against Brighton, and Ten Hag's going to look down the bench and he's going to call on Ronaldo. Of course he does. I think we only said trailing by one goal and they were trailing by two. But yeah, for Ronaldo, he is seeing the Ronaldo movie, the Ronaldo legend, the Ronaldo retrospective at that point. And he's thinking, I'm going to come on and score a hat-trick.
And United were gifted a way back into the game via slapstick Sanchez flailing McAllister own goal. 2-1. Old Trafford believed again. But honestly, it's kind of incredible, this. Just Brighton's last 10-minute drill to kill off the game. Ten Hag threw on three attackers, I think, at the death. And the imbalance in their team that resulted meant they never or barely touched the ball again. The game deteriorated. Just the energy just bled out of the stadium. I think United fans in the South Stand even had a series of fist fights between themselves, which was honestly just so bloody sad to witness. That club has become a Grey Gardens under hapless American ownership. But we've got to credit all hail Brighton and Hove Albion, right?
Seems to happen again. You know, they lose, you know, we'll talk later about, you know, Kukure and what a great player he is. And they've lost him, one of their, you know, great finds of
last season.
Yeah, of last season. And then they're just playing seamless football, getting performances out of, you know, the mixture of sort of players that other teams weren't looking at. And like a guy like Danny Welbeck, who Welbs was just fantastic throughout this game. Pascal Gross, those goals, like just front to back. What a performance by this team, and a coaching masterclass from Graham Potter.
Yeah, and Ten Hag, we always say, listen to our podcast, Brighton and Hove Albion, never play two teams at once, man. But I'm so happy for the bloody Seagulls. They begin their sixth successive top flight season with a historic win. They never won in the city of Manchester before, Dave. This was their first victory at Old Trafford. And remember, they lost Bissouma and just swaggered into Old Trafford, emerged with the points. And I love Graham Potter's post-match quip, the collective idea is more important than any individual. Which brings us to United. For Ten Hag, we are already at the give him time, give him money, give him multiple transfer window stage of the process. And the terrifying reality for me, as I said, was just how much this United was like Rangnick's and Ole's. And if Potter is right about collective ideas being important, we saw a little glimpse yet of Ten Hag's collective ideas, Dave, right?
Yeah, I mean, you feel like it all has to get worse before it gets better, but it will be masked over again because they have some very, very good players and they'll manage to eke out points, but there's still no collective culture in this team. There's no there's very little, you know, team identity, and this is a long project for Ten Hag, a very, very long project.
I would resist the urge to write him off, Ten Hag, but it has to be said, he cut a noticeably more confused and bewildered figure post-game, calling it a real disappointment, suddenly face-to-face with the enormous set of challenges he faces, that woodworm devoured defence, the lack of a centre midfield pairing, the transfer mess of no Frankie de Jong, and the club suddenly leaping for anyone available, like Juventus midfielder Adrian Rabiot, to fill it and support, replace Ronaldo. This season could get so ugly for the Glazers. How United fans would kill for Kira Walsh, Lucy Bronze and Alicia Russo in this United team. Lols.
Okay, Roger, Crystal Palace 0, Arsenal 2. Goals from Gabriel Martinelli and a Bukayo Saka cross turned into the net by Mark Gahey bookended a tough fought London derby. It may not have been the demolition job Gunners fans dreamed of after their preseason, but a solid defensive performance from debutant William Saliba helped alleviate the stress inherited from last season's Friday night football opening day loss to Brentford, which only got mentioned about once every 5 minutes.
Yeah, it was echoes of the past bubbling in the air ahead of this one. That memory of Arsenal's last year opening game at the delirious Brentford. But here they talk against Vieira, that old Arsenal legend, to the field, a very different creature. Arsenal, $148 million spent. Alexander Zinchenko and Gabriel Jesus starting, alive from the off. It was as if Arteta had unleashed "You'll never walk alone" in that changing room with the volume turned up to 11. Whatever Arteta did, it seemed to work. His team set to purr. Zinchenko everywhere. It's like there were two of him, one on the flank, one in the middle, flitting in to the Xhaka space. And Jesus had one incredible run. You know when Ronaldo came through and everyone forgot about the original Brazilian Ronaldo?
Yeah.
Jesus is playing as if he thinks, you know, that might happen for him.
Yeah, weirdly. Yeah, I'm not sure that that's completely accurate, Rod, but I'll let
like
you
that.
Go with it.
Yeah. Is that what you're saying?
You, yeah.
Credit Palace, well organised. For 8 hours, they kept their opponents off the board at home. Arsenal have reportedly been giving an incredible amount of work on the training ground to their set-piece play, and it paid off inside 20 minutes. Corner routine. Corner smack so deep. Zinchenko charging in blind side, knocked it back against the box. I don't know what it was. Were the Palace defenders just mesmerised by his Ukrainian big air, David?
I don't know. I think more Wilfried Zaha just completely failed to track his run to the back post. I mean, it was almost inexcusable.
Martinelli unmarked and challenged, not the ball home. First goal of the Premier League season. You've got to credit your Palace, though. The goal seemed to lead to them upping their intensity. That new boy, Doucouré, led the way to Arsenal's press. Joachim Anderson pinging crossfield passes all over the field. No Conor Gallagher, yes. But my God, Palace in that cauldron. I'm pretty sure scientifically they play better once darkness has set in.
Yeah, I think Steve Parrish has spoken to us about that on the pod before, that as it sort of gets, you know, the second half and the position of the sun and the ends that they kick into and where their fans are located, I think they like trying to come back from goals later in the game. And Palace, I think, looked good all day. I think it only made Arsenal's win more impressive because I thought Palace, you know, offered quite a lot of resistance.
Zaha charging at Ben White, the superlative Saliba, back from a season of loan at Marseille. I think I had far more opportunities to show his quality than maybe he would have expected. Needed an own goal from Gueye to prevent the anxiety kicking in. Just say Chris Richards would never. At Austin Bundy, DC, screamed, "Champions of August 5th, 2022. You'll never sing that."
You know, long-time Arsenal observers do notice something a little bit different. Of course, you know, Arsenal fans themselves are getting delirious, but I think even more objective observers and even people like me who are subjective on the wrong way, you know, they're the club I don't want to do particularly well, but I've been very, very impressed with Arsenal in pre-season. And I was very impressed with this Arsenal victory because it took a lot of those qualities which Arsenal don't always find a way to win when you're not playing particularly well, when the opposition are offering, tough resistance. And I thought Arsenal went and eked out a really good victory against a very good team. And I'd say Man City, obviously, West Ham, as I said earlier, give them credit. This was a 2-0 win at West Ham, who are very good. I think similarly, this 2-0 win at Crystal Palace on opening day, I think this was a great sign of things to come at Arsenal.
One dark note, Arsenal have been dogged all summer by reports that a Premier League player in his late 20s had been arrested by police on rape allegations in North London, which internet rumours link very much to an Arsenal player. Libel laws in England prevent the English media from naming him, but let's just say Thomas Partey was booed every single time he touched the ball, and police investigations are still ongoing. But a banner was flown over Selhurst Park in protest of violence against women. I think the organisers are named Level Up, a community group campaigning for justice in the UK. And this is the amazing thing. It was paid for by Arsenal fans who want the club to lead the way on this issue inside the Premier League. And God bless Arsenal fans. The club needs to listen to them. Arsenal can be such a much needed positive voice on this agonising issue. Kroenke family, step up for once. Come on, do the right thing.
Tottenham 4, Southampton 1. Spurs' campaign of glory looked to have hit an early sand trap when James Ward-Prowse volleyed home a cross from the edge of the box only 12 minutes into the match. The Tottenham response was comprehensive, though, treating Southampton like a ketchup packet and tossing them aside. Goals from Ryan Sessegnon, Eric Dier, Kulishevsky, and a Southampton own goal saw the match finish 4-1.
We talked last week on AMP about Tottenham being true top four contenders. Whether they are top one contenders, that will be a question for the first half of this season. And on the evidence of one game, minute evidence, my God, some statement victory, a come from behind, clenched fist delivered to Ralph Hasenhüttl's boys, who had the temerity to take the lead via a crafty James Ward-Prowse banger. But it proved merely to be a punch in the mouth, which woke up the inner Italian Begbie inside of Antonio Conte's mob. And the rest was just a Dejan Kulusevski-inspired slaughter. So many positives for Tottenham, Dave, that the first two goals were scored by defenders. Forever prodigy Ryan Sessegnon's first Premier League goal ever. And the Direwolf. God, to see him back. I think he's not scored in 3 long years, Dave. Just across the field. Great players doing great things for Tottenham and the good ones being coached upwards.
Yeah, and yeah, that Dier goal was fantastic. The Sessegnon goal was fantastic. And, you know, not having to rely on Harry Kane and Youngman Son and just the quality of the people they've brought in. You know, when Perisic trotted on at the end, I'd actually forgotten that Perisic had come to Tottenham. Probably one of the least talked about major signings of the offseason. And Perisic coming on, you start to look at the depth of that squad and some of the quality they've got. A very, very deserved large victory against a team, I should say, that I think are in trouble.
You mentioned Perisic, and it was a great day for Tottenham fans. The greatest part of it was that Conte was able to start so many of his big signings, like Perisic, Bissouma, Clement Longley and Jed Spence on the bench so that he can ease them in. Richarlison available from now on. He served his suspension. And so Spurs had opening day glory, but there is still clearly so much depth to come. But my God, Kulusevski delivering the coup de grace with a casual flourish. How did Juventus let him go? What a player. His passing, his deceptive speed, his sense of space. What a difference maker that human being is.
Yeah, no, he's a brilliant, brilliant footballer. Would sparkle in any league and on any team within any of those leagues.
What a difference a year makes this time last season. Remember Harry Kane, miserable and done. Nuno, the manager, club, shambles. How we laughed. Conte almost always does the laughing last. And it is the high-pitched, demented laugh of Anton Chigger in No Country for Old Men. Post-sadistic, cattle-prod-induced savagery. Premier League be warned, but we've missed the big news, the headline from this game, Dave. I've got to ask you, what did you think of Ralph Hasenhüttl's bold tactical move, going waistcoat, no blazer, no socks and box fresh white sneakers?
It was a lot. He seems to think he's got to step up his game from last year. We've seen him in the vest. He's blonde vest, but yeah. The sneaker with two of the pieces from the three-piece suit and the no sock look, it's bold. It's bold. I respect, but it was bold.
It's like Phil Collins, no jacket required, meets Greg Berhalter. At Gunner in Japan tweeted, Hasenhüttl looks like the fifth best mixologist in Kitzbühel. This episode is supported by FX's Welcome to Wrexham. Celebrity owners Rob McElhenney and Ryan Reynolds' small town Welsh football club has finally been promoted into League Two after 15 long seasons of exile in the National League. Dedicated staff and passionate supporters celebrate the city's return to glory, the big time, all while bracing for the newfound challenges that come with being in that higher league. Will Wrexham AFC stand up to the challenge and rise again into League One's promised land? FX's Welcome to Wrexham premieres May 2nd on FX. Stream on Hulu.
Okay, it's time to commit. 2024 is the year for prioritizing yourself. Begin your new smile journey with Byte, and you could start seeing results in just 2 to 3 weeks. Just order your at-home impression kit today for only $14.95 at Byte.com. Byte Clear Aligners are doctor-directed and delivered to your door. Treatment costs thousands less than braces. Plus, they offer financing options, accept eligible insurance, and you can pay with your HSA, FSA. Get 80% off your impression kit when you use code WONDERY at Byte.com. That's BYTE.com. Start your confidence journey today with Byte.
Okay. Okay. Leads to Wolves 1, Rog, an American-Portuguese proxy war.
Yes.
Fought out on a Yorkshire battleground, and it is the Americans who come out on top after Wolves started the scoring with a scissoring Daniel Podence bouncing Betty in the 6th minute. Leeds hit back. Brendan Aaronson created a turnover in the Wolves box. The ball broke to Rodrigo out on the right, and he lashed one past Jose Sarr in goal. And then in the 74th minute, after your mate Tyler Adams broke the lines with a beautiful ball, Patrick Bamford's cross found a streaking Brendan Aaronson for the game winner. It was officially ruled an own goal, but the Men in Blazers dubious goals committee has looked at it and has decided on this show we're giving it to that P51 Mustang in football boots. What a win and what a goal for Brendan Aaronson, Rog.
What a massive, massive moment for United States men's football. Really, really, really is. And for Americans in the Premier League, this is the truth. This is not hyperbolic. Not just two starters, Brendan Aaronson, 21 years age, Medford, New Jersey, soccer Timothy Chalamet, and Tyler Adams, 23 years old, from Wappingers Falls, New York, both making their debut. But this is a Premier League club managed for the first time in our nation's history at the beginning of a season by an American, Racine Wisconsin's Jesse Marsh, with American ownership in the form of the San Francisco 49ers. But if these things go well, this is great for all of us. We are going to savour this. If things go belly up, we will, believe me, in this conservative, just very risk-averse world of English football, we will pay a price. So savour days like this. And God, what is that line from Hamilton? That's what I thought of at kickoff. And so the American experiment begins. At ZGross12 tweeted, have Leeds United, Davo, officially supplanted the Cowboys as America's team?
Yeah, it's pretty incredible. I heard from so many people this weekend who've never ever messaged me about soccer, suddenly just really into Leeds and that Leeds victory. It does feel, Rog, that for so long we've been grasping at so many straws, as we've had to with American involvement in the Premier League. But, you know, looking at this Leeds performance this weekend, you know, Tyler Adams, Brendan Aaronson, Jesse Marsh, all so central to every single good thing that was going on. It must be what it's like for Spanish people watching the Premier League and watching, you know, all these amazing Spanish managers and Spanish players. It was just, this is what it's like. We're not trying to grasp at all. This was, he was involved. He made a defensive header here that led to 5 passes later, the ball going in the net, or trying to convince yourself that the XG or the dribbles won or the offensive actions happened. This was a manager and two players genuinely being the story of the game. You know, wherever you're from, I thought it was absolutely fantastic to watch.
I loved it from the outset. Tyler Adams set the tone with a crunching tackle on Neves from the off. It was not the start, we should note, that Leeds wanted. Caught by a sucker punch, Neto floated the ball to Huang at the far post, and he set up Podence to take an improvised flick of a shot off the ground. The ball span up agonizingly. What a nightmare. Leeds, though, credit them. God, it felt like the whole thing could just deflate and spiral out of control, but they took it on the chin. They drove forward. It was helter-skelter, this game. Aaronson everywhere, a bit like Taylor Swift's private jet, and he thrashed one just wide off a deflection. The Endeavour lifted the crowd. They hunted in packs. Ellen rode a cauldron, and it seemed to inspire the players to summon the belief that they belonged and could pummel Wolves. And it was Brendan Aaronson's persistence alongside honorary American Jack Harrison, the best New York-New Jersey combo since the Metro Stars, who caused a turnover inside the Wolves area, leading to the Leeds equaliser. My God, in that moment, I watched Brendan Aaronson. I was like, this kid was running around the Philadelphia Union Academy a couple of years ago. Here, he was chasing down defenders on Premier League turf. Rodriguez slapped home through a admittedly dodgy keeper. And we got a note, Dave, out. Second half, Leeds intensity did burn off. Neto started to propel Wolves forward through the midfield at will. Better teams probably could have, would have scored once, twice in that opening of the second half.
But they didn't. But they didn't. And Leeds found a way. Yeah, Wolves, this was a very opening day-like performance by them. Clearly, their manager was extraordinarily frustrated, which we'll get to. But Leeds were difficult. They were, you know, throwing their bodies into it. You know, they do look stronger as well as fitter. And they were just being pests. They were stopping Wolves from playing football, which is, by the way, what Wolves have done a lot themselves. And sometimes that's necessary if you're going to lift yourself back into being a mid-table team, which has got to be the ambition for Jesse Marsh this season.
Then the moment, 74th minute, Adams starting the move, Jack Harrison involved again, Brendan Aaronson speeding in on the line. Ain't Norrie said to a prodded at home, but my God, Brendan Aaronson, Premier League Shawn Mendes, sped away, celebrated, just a move ripped from American fans' dreams. David, can we all agree? Did we not see with our own eyes? Can we not agree? It was US international Brendan Aaronson who scored the winner on his Premier League debut.
Yes, in the NBA, in college basketball and the WNBA, you credit the nearest offensive player, Rog, when a player puts it into his own bucket. This was, I think, calling that an own goal is positively un-American. That was a goal. That was an American goal. That was for Brendan Aaronson.
It came off my shin somewhere in there, he said post-game.
Somewhere in there.
I love
Important.
This kid and his confidence. At Cam330 tweeted us, the first 2024 presidential election debate needs to open and close with the question, did Brendan Aaronson score in the opener? Not content though, just with the 2-1 win, Jesse Marsh, what happened at the final whistle, David, with Wolves coach Bruno Lage, little largy-bargy?
Yeah, it was an interesting one. I mean, we don't know the full details, or I certainly don't know the full details. You may have done sort of some deep investigative undercover work to figure it out. It sort of looked to me, and we've all seen this done, that Jesse Marsh, in prevent a fight, managed to instigate a fight or prolong a fight at the same time.
We've all been there.
We've all done it. That sort of moment where you try to stop it. No, lads, no, as you push somebody a little bit too hard and you get in the middle of it. It looked like it was a classic fight accelerant when he was acting like he was trying to, like, sort of, you know, make it all go away.
Jesse Marsh said afterwards that it was nothing. It was just nothing. Lage told the media that he was very displeased with the way Jesse Marsh talked to his players, Hwang in particular. But Jesse Marsh don't care. He do not care. I like to believe that my lip reading was right, that he leant into Bruno's ear and just whispered, "You lose. Now you have to call it soccer from here on in." And Jesse Marsh, by the way, gives zero craps about what anybody thinks about him. But I did love watching him march up to the Leeds faithful in the Jackie Charlton stand, orchestrating their post-match joy with arm punches and slightly hilarious finger wiggles. It was like some kind of version of Badger State Klopp, a tradition I would like to see repeat itself, please God, over and over this season. A signature win to kick off. Let's be clear, plenty of challenges in that squad in the post-Calvin Phillips and Rafinha era. There were spells in both halves when the defence was split wide open. Chaotically, Wolves just couldn't take advantage of the situation. Other teams will. Southampton up next, then Chelsea. Let's really start celebrating after that. But Davo, Leeds United States of America against full America in October. I mean, is that not bigger than the Super Bowl? It's definitely the biggest MLS game of all time, right?
Yeah, that's pretty big. I would counsel, Rog, I should say, Jesse Marsh. I know he doesn't give a crap, but I would counsel him not to become a lightning rod for opposition managers and fans. You know, early in his Premier League career, you know, when he hasn't won a lot yet, he might sort of want to sort of, like, you know, tamp down that sort of energy. He's a brilliant manager. He's clearly getting everything out of his players. I don't think it's in his or the American States United's interests at this point.
Can you tamp something up? If you can, Jesse, tamp it up.
Well, that's exactly what he was trying to do in that fight, Rog. He was trying to tamp it up.
Tamp it up, lads. I will say the fight did make me feel a certain sense of relief that Sean Dyche is not in the Premier League anymore.
Yeah, exactly. He might not live to tell the tale. Rog, you're going to talk more about this game with none other than Tyler Adams. You're taping with him later today for episode 4 of Tyler Adams' Road to the Cup, powered by Volkswagen. It drops next Tuesday right here on this very pod feed. Now to Newcastle 2, Nottingham Forest 0. The Toon get their first win of the Premier League season over new boys Nottingham Forest after a scoreless first half. Fabian Schär sent a Swiss thunderbolt into the Forest net in the 58th minute. And then just 20 minutes later, Callum Wilson, in a tribute to Toon supporter Phil Mickelson, produced a piece of short game wizardry with a deft flick for the second. They're off and running in the Northeast / Middle East, Rosh.
Massive day for both of these clubs. Newcastle, effervescent on the opening day of the first full season under Saudi owners, their fans raising a banner which proclaimed it's a new dawn, it's a new day, it's a new life for NUFC, and we're feeling good. Oh, Forest, sleeping giant no more, back in the big time, first time in 23 years, after a worse than near first championship season, which they emerged from the playoffs under young manager, bringing sexy back Steve Cooper. They were game, they were nervy, their squad filled with new players, still a work in progress, but they were organised enough to keep Newcastle at the back, attempting to exert unique competitive advantage with some truly bonkers corner routines where they have no one in the area until the last second and every single player just charges into the box like some kind of NFL onside kick drill. Look at it, it's on our Instagram. It didn't work, cue global laughter, but I'll say the very first time it does, football may never be the same again. Ultimately, two moments of finishing class. The second, Callum Wilson finished so tasty, enough to see off Forest, give them a lot to think about. And the way Alan Saint-Maximin and Guimaraes carved up the midfield, these two are going to make Newcastle and Saudi Arabia look very, very good this season.
Leicester 2, Brentford 2, the Foxes campaign got off to a flying start after Timothy Castagna turned in a 33rd minute James Maddison corner. 12 minutes later, Kiernan Drewsbury-Hall caught hold of a Jamie Vardy layoff and sent a grass trimmer beyond the Brentford goalkeeper. But Leicester is, as Leicester does, a second half lapse allowed Ivan Toney to pull one back for the Bees, and it was Josh De Silva's curling effort just before stoppage time which secured a draw for the Bees.
The post-Kasper Schmeichel era begins for Brodge, whose team played with a clenched fist and a glass jaw. I actually believe either one of these two clubs could be pulled into the relegation battle this season. A depleted Leicester with Pereira cruelly out for 6 months. He just battled back from one Achilles injury, then went and tore another. And Fofana and possibly Maddison on the move. Brentford adjusting to that post-Christian Eriksen high, were tenacious at least. Lovely moment for Josh De Silva to score in the 86th minute. A young player who's been out with injury for almost a year, revelling in his return. And it ended with Brentford fans getting to bellow at the final whistle, 2-0, and you effed it up.
Yeah, absolutely, they did eff it up, Rog, but a very, very entertaining game of football. Okay. Bournemouth 2, Aston Villa 0. A perfect opening day in the Bournemouth sunshine for Scott Parker and his ever-so-subtle Tom Brown blazer. The Cherries had the lead inside 2 minutes after Jefferson Lerma pounced on corner slop in the 80th minute. A looping Lloyd Kelly cross found a completely unchallenged Kiefer Moore, who guided his header home for a 2-0 win.
Humiliation for Steven Gerrard on the opening day, in which so much was expected for his heavily invested in squad. He'd had a full pre-season to prepare for this against Bournemouth, largely viewed as relegation fodder, even by their own manager, dashing Spitfire pilot Scotty Parker. Welcome back. He'd said his squad was weaker than the one that had gained promotion from the Championship. But even with that, they had enough to absolutely clip and humiliate Aston Villa. Stevie G tried a tactical change at halftime, ditched his suit blazer, went shirt only, but it made no difference. Luckily for Villa, they face Charities Everton next week, but have West Ham, Arsenal, Manchester City on the horizon. Stevie G does not know his first 11, loosely roaming Coutinho and Ings, stinking up the field while Buendia, Watkins ride the bench. Tyrone Mings, once captain, now not in the team. Still the man picked out by Steven Gerrard, oddly, in his post-match excuses to pick on. What a terrible start for the season. Still story, Davo. English defenders. White played out of position. Mings out the first team. Cody worse, linked to Everton. Stones out. Are we Harry Maguire's team now, Davo?
Yeah, it could be. Look, there's a lot of football to come, and we'll see the emergence of a lot of players in form. But I do think you're right. This... you know, and there are going to be so many teams who could be sucked into a relegation battle this year. Or is it just going to be one very, very large mid-table? But Aston Villa, those are worrying signs in the Midlands. Okay, we got to get to it. Rog, Everton 0, Chelsea 1, an opening weekend El Blazerico. The fixture that brought Everton fans world over so much happiness last season ends in a victory for the visitors. The difference in this one, a Jorginho penalty in the last kick of the first half after Everton's strong safety, Abdoulaye Doucouré, essentially horse collar tackled Ben Chilwell in the box. Although Dixon saw nothing. So odd to start the season with an El Blazerico, Roger, fixture that is the emotional equivalent to a Four Loko.
El Blazerico, the big Rob Memorial Derby, Stephen Naismith hat-trick game, big dunk, ball boy hug, pink sweater, ball at the shirt guy, fixture in which legends are born. And one day, but I couldn't believe this either, ahead of kickoff, Chelsea had not won at Goodison Park in their previous four league visits.
Yeah, absolutely. But this has been a miserable fixture for us for the last few years.
Did this really happen? How did I not extract pleasure from it when it could? There's a secret in there, dear listeners. Take happiness when you can, while you can, because Everton staggered in. Remember after that season when we limped to the end, 25 points from our last 31 league games, and they'd lost Richarlison, and then DCL fell over in training. He's out for 6 weeks. And the pre-game headlines were all, Lampard believes beautiful survival battle will make Everton stronger, which made me feel that Superfrank had taken our live show a bit too seriously from a messaging perspective. But the reality is, all we won last season was the right to be pissed off, frustrated and let down for 38 more games. But get in, loser, we're going crying. You're Chelsea, so struggling in attack. Tuchel left to publicly ponder if the number 9 shirt was cursed. Raz started, Pulisic on the bench, Timo Werner about to limp back to Leipzig. How was your mood and your expectations ahead of this one?
Don't enjoy El Blazericos. This hasn't been a good fixture for us the last few years. Haven't played our best football. Didn't play our best football again, it should be said. But I was excited to see Sterling, Koulibaly, Cucurella. I was excited to see them play and see how Tuchel was going to, set up his side.
I sat there at home so bloody fearful. I can't even describe. I raise a bud to a season of false confidence, self-delusion, magical thinking and shattered dreams. I actually had my mum mug at the ready. It never fails. And I bought myself a new vintage Everton jacket from Classic Football Shirts. And I told myself, Everton have never lost in this lucky jacket, which I had just purchased last week. We fielded no striker. Pep plays false nine because he's a tactical genius. Everton play false nine because we are skint and we have no options. The Goodison crowd, though, oh my God, a bear pit. And the football from the lads reflected it. Robust, horrible moment. Kai Havertz pouncing on a Jordan Pickford error, forcing Ben Godfrey to deliver a crunching saving tackle in which he fractured his leg. I feel for that kid. What a great game guy he is. Just been out with injury, now going to be out for a lengthy period again. Turns out the ball had gone out. We shouldn't have even been in play. Ref didn't see it, but Everton, aren't we? And the game really was grapple, Dave. A lot of Chelsea just bouncing one corner after another off Holgate's head.
Yeah, there was very little space for either team at Chelsea. And we should say Everton sat very deep in that first half and just said, Chelsea, you don't have any offensive players who are terrifying us, just come on to us. And, apart from Raz, I think Chelsea really did deliver on that front. They didn't threaten a lot, but they did get a lot of corners. I certainly won quite a lot in that first half on the over, but the corners really amounted to nothing.
I think Everton got turtle head every time Raz was on the ball and deep into the 8 minutes of extra time. Chilwell span into the area. Doucouré had hands all over him. Well, on-ish. Chilwell fell to the ground. I put this one under both a needless penalty conceded and a dive at the same time, right?
Maybe a dive. It's tough. When you watch that in fast motion, it looks pretty stone cold. But in slow motion, perhaps less so. But, look, the Everton defenders had played very, very physically on Chelsea for the whole game. And ultimately, if you get the wrong side of the ball, it's going to hurt you if you're using your arms too much. The interesting thing for me is that's a run that I'm not sure we've seen Chilwell make in his entire Chelsea career, getting that far inside. And definitely this is what, you know, starting at the back, Koulibaly at certain points of that game was playing, you know, old-fashioned center half. He was sort of a pivot in the middle of the pitch. Kante playing way further forward than we're used to seeing him. You know, definitely seeing, you know, Chilwell in particular cut inside. So, there it was. Jorginho steps up. No hoppity-skippity, Rog. He took that out, and a great penalty. 1-0 to the Chelsea.
Yeah, we hope Pickford had broken him in the Euros last summer. Not to be. And despite Yerry Mina's excellent shithousery trying to ice Jorginho, his 20th straight goal from the penalty spot. Now, his last 20 goals for Chelsea have all been penalties. That is remarkable. And the deflating part for Everton fans was that our players are operating at near optimal output. Really were. Wobi hustling, Tarkowski looking like captain material, Patterson looking so lively. Looks like a player who cannot wait to get a red card in the first derby against Liverpool. Chelsea, though, seem to be playing at or near their worst, yet they were still ahead. And second half, more of the same. Everton huffing, puffing, all their might, creating some panic in the Chelsea area without actually forcing Mendy to do very much at all. Were you surprised down the stretch from like the 65th minute onwards, your Chelsea kind of holding on, time-wasting under the fairly useless eye of referee Craig Pawson? We surprised you, lads were like 1-0 against Everton. Let's hold on to that. I mean, lads, it's just Everton.
Yeah, I think there was a lot of game management going on, but it is a difficult place to play with that crowd super fired up, and much better Chelsea teams have lost sizably at Goodison over the last few seasons. Tuchel cutting a very frustrated figure on the sideline for pretty much the entire game. But I think there's some positive to take out of it. I thought Sterling was fantastic throughout. He honestly looks like, you know, our best player since Eden Hazard.
Grew in confidence, class of the game. Seemed to really savour and demand the ball.
Yeah, I thought he was just superb and really, really up for it, wants to succeed. I thought Koulibaly looked assured and superb. And then when Cucurella came on at the end, wow, he just looked pure class.
I will say £68 million transfer fee, which despite his great talent seems super, super high. Perhaps the Bowley premium that teams are extracting. It would get worse for Everton. Yerry Mina falling under no challenge, out with what looks like an Achilles injury. Everton now down two centre-backs. We need strikers so badly. Now need defensive cover. We're absolutely broke. Connor Cody can't come in quick enough. Everton just needed a moment. We got one. Sadly fell to the recently subbed in Dele from close range. He thought for a second, I think, about chipping the ball into the air and then just spinning round and smacking it home on the volley, but then just chose option B, which was to sadly fall over. It is so humanly devastating to witness. Honestly, no jokes, his decline. It just breaks my effing heart. Angry Everton fans swearing too close to the field, Mike. God, hearing him, it's like hearing the first cuckoo of spring. Welcome back, mate. Chelsea, what's your feeling? New era, new ownership, victory. Tuchel said maybe it was not the most exciting game in the history of the Premier League, but a win is a win.
My favourite thing he said after the game was about Raz Rog, where we mentioned about him, a repetition of intensity, which I love that. And now I feel that every time I'm watching Raz, a repetition of intensity. I think this was good after a terrible preseason, an opening day victory, something to build on, new players playing very, very well. Now let's see where it all goes.
And the fact that you won for the first time without Matt Miazga must have made it all feel a bit more
yeah,
special, right?
I know, it's tough. I'm still getting over that one, Rog.
I will say a lot of your squad's creativity seems to be solely devoted to their hair work.
Yeah.
Cucurella, Animal from the Muppets, Pulisic, Electric Blonde Mullet, Conor Gallagher's feathers. Chelsea turning into Image FC.
Yeah, however, the most remarkable haircut, I think, was, your boy Gordon's haircut. That's quite a lot of work. That was a lot of time in the barber's chair, Rog.
He's got all the ginger dye out now and he's a natural blonde. Oh, for Chelsea, Tottenham Hotspur next Sunday. I'd say that will be the true moment of truth. My dreams of Everton's invincible season now lie in tatters.
Yes.
First opening day defeat in a decade. Starting to realise, Dave, that the delirium of last May The BBC are already running with headlines. Everton face crucial days that will shape their season. I think our mission is now clear. 37 games to go. 40 points to somehow find or forage. Midfielders Amadou Onana and Idrissa Gueye are about to arrive. Welcome back, Idrissa. Wolves defender Connor Cody too. I think we buy anybody who scored on us. That's what we pass off as scouting at Everton Football Club. My mantra for this season, Davo: bite your arm off for lower mid-table.
Absolutely. Okay, Rog, before we go, a quick reminder about everything we have happening at Men in Blazers World Headquarters this week. Our new series, American States United, presented by ESPN Plus, drops right here on this very pod feed with your interview with Arsenal's American goalkeeper, Matt Turner. On Wednesday, you drop another wonderful interview, American CEO of Nottingham Forest, Dane Murphy, presented by the GFOPs at Camarena Tequila. And Wednesday evening, we do it live on AMP. This is an AMP exclusive. The only way to hear this will be on the AMP app. We will not be releasing it as a podcast in the wake of it. The link to join it is all over our website. What a week, Rog. Can we get a tourist to close this podcast?
What a raise, a final shot of Jägermeister, that human emotion in a shot glass, to the fact that it is Philip Larkin's 100th birthday tomorrow. If he was still alive, he's dead. But the English poet, a miserable sod by all accounts, a gent who remained a librarian in Hull for much of his life. Hull, essentially, the middle of nowhere, way up north, I think roughly, correct me if I'm wrong, listeners, English Bangor, Maine, where he churned out his poetry, what he described as showing life as it is in all its pockmarked hopefulness and begrudged disappointment. And I remember being a kid having to study The Wits and Weddings, his magnificent book, in English class as a teenager. And his poetry spoke to me because an adult had never spoken like that before. It's a bit like Catcher in the Rye for American kids. You think, oh my God, this guy gets me. And you then discover everybody loves it. His lines, they F you up. Your mum and dad, they may not mean to, but they do. They fill you with the faults they had and add some extra just for you. Wow, just wow. GFOP at OAJ tweeted to say, Rog, are we doing anything for next week's Philip Larkin's 100th birthday? Maybe an off-sequence communal sad nap? The reality is there's events up and down England, none that I know of, in the United States. But I will say this day and every day, let's try to channel Larkin. I mean, so much of his poetry is bloody miserable, but occasionally he drops a line of such love and wonder we should celebrate him with and try and live out. Such as the line from the Mower, which ends every single newsletter that we send out. We should be careful of each other. We should be kind. Well, there is still time. Courage.
Beautiful, Rog. Okay, you can follow us on Twitter at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davis, at Rog Bennett, on Instagram at Men in Blazers, at Embassy Davis, on Facebook with the Men in Blazers, on Twitch, twitch.tv/Men in Blazers. We're on YouTube. Please subscribe to our channel there. You can see a video version of this very podcast there. And we're also on Snapchat. Just search Men in Blazers. Visit our website at meninblazers.com. Buy our merch. You can always email us at meninblazers@gmail.com. Vendor.Rog.
War pig!
Was that a Rabona?
I like snacks.
Balds win, balds win.
Take that, Gloria.
Balds lose.
To Tweed.
Abrigado, rock on, mate.
Kung Fu Fight in America. Love you, Davo.
Love you, Rog.
Bite your arm off for lower mid-table. Hey, Prime members. You can listen to Men in Blazers ad-free on Amazon Music. Download the Amazon Music app today. Or you can listen ad-free with Wondery Plus in Apple Podcasts. Before you go, tell us about yourself by completing a short survey at wondery.com/survey.
Yo, Trey.
Yeah, Kevin, what's up, man?
I was just thinking, what would have happened if Drew Brees didn't fail his physical with the Dolphins and ended up playing under Nick Saban in Miami?
There's a good shot the Finns establish a dynasty. Tom Brady and Bill Belichick probably don't become GOATs, and Tuscaloosa doesn't become the center of the college football universe.
That's a butterfly effect for real.
Hey, I'm Trey Wingo.
And I'm Kevin Frazier. We're teaming up on a new weekly sports podcast from Wondery, Alternate Routes.
As former SportsCenter anchors and current sports obsessives, we're consumed by all the what-if questions that make being a sports fan so excruciatingly fun.
If you're like us, then you also live and die on the fallout from every drop pass
or play call.
Intercepted at the goal line by Malcolm Butler.
Sorry, Marshawn, still too soon. Each week on Alternate Routes, we'll take a flashpoint in sports, break down what actually happened, then explore every alternate scenario and the ripple effects it would have caused.
Follow Alternate Routes on the Wondery app or wherever you get your podcasts. You can listen early and ad-free right now by joining Wondery Plus.